is the UR Business Network.
Greetings and welcome to the Entrepreneurs Guild. This is your host, Tom Stemple.
Today, my guest is Hugh Glaser. You may recall Hugh was on our show a little bit earlier, a couple of weeks ago. Welcome back. It's great to have you here. Hugh is a CPA, also a business advisor and CFO for private companies, and his company is called the Winterview Group, and he's based out of Marblehead, Massachusetts. So great to have you here again.
Yeah, good afternoon, Tom. Thank you, and I'm enjoying coming back.
Well, it's great to have you here. We've kicked around a lot of good ideas about topics that we could cover today, and then just recently you sent me a really interesting email that I thought would be a great topic for us to kind of dig into here. I think one of the things you mentioned was that one of the topics that you keep seeing most often is the need for growing companies to kind of take a step back and map out the transaction workflow. And I don't think people really comprehend how valuable that can be, both for a brand new company that's first starting to establish their operating procedures, but also for companies to do on a going forward basis, just kind of keep their arms around thing, make sure that they understand their operating model.
I think what happens is the price of success is that all of a sudden everything's moving and there's 1,000 pieces, and all of a sudden everybody wakes up sometimes it's being overwhelmed by, whoa, what's going on? And it's even things about how much money's in the bank, and there's a whole almost a kind of kettle of fish things that happen, because usually companies that are successful start out with the enthusiasm of an entrepreneur or a family business, a secondary generation, and everybody's excited, wants to do make the product, or if it's a manufacturing situation, or deliver the service, and the price of success is everything starts taking off at the same time. And then all of a sudden, you know, the focus is on delivering, how do we make the product? How do we deliver the service? And nobody is really thinking at the beginning, because it's not all that critical at the beginning, what's the business process
right.
that has to sit underneath the product or service delivery process. And I'm mm-hmm. finding now people are coming to me realizing that they've got, you know, the business is moving, good things are happening, and they need someone to kind of help them sort of create that operational glue
right.
to go along with the main theme of the business.
Yeah, no, that's very true. I think people find themselves in a circumstance where they may be doing well, but they feel very out of control. And I give people credit for understanding that, because if they're starting to feel out of control, then they're on the verge of being completely out of control, usually.
So, yeah, that's a very good instinct, because very often I have a background in turnaround management, and that mm-hmm. comes when you're working with people where no one realized that till it was
too late.
They were already in underwater and so forth. So it is important to try anytime you're not comfortable that you have a process of a procedure, even if it's for training new people and how the information system and financial transactions go along with that. If there's any uncertainty or discomfort that the senior management team has, that's a sign that it's maybe, like you said, not stop the engine, begin to sort of parallel or shadow effort to kind of take a look at what's happening.
Yeah, how things are really getting done.
Exactly.
Yeah, and to your point, it's really a matter of kind of stepping back and assessing, you know, what are the ins and the outs? You know, what happens with this entire workflow? And I know some of the work that I did both in corporate and in my consulting experience is a lot of sort of business process reengineering. I'm sure you do the same thing. And it's you know, to me, it's a matter of having everybody stop and look at each one of the steps and each one of the processes, because over time they've made a lot of decisions. They may have been decisions to solve a problem or to capitalize on an opportunity or something, but those decisions lead to changes, and as those changes layer on top of each other, things get very complicated.
You know, that's very similar with my experience as well, Tom, in the sense that you're talking about the business process engineering. I kind of take the earlier stage, because people, and we say engineering, you know, change. By nature, people think change. The word change is disruptive. And it doesn't have to be. Yeah.
That's true.
So
yeah.
I take the look at, let's say, let's kind of do a flow or a flow chart or a sketch out. And sometimes now it's great with these, you know, idea paint where you can have a rewritable board on the wall and you just kind of draw it out, that to kind of look at what the process is.
Yeah.
As a pathway or a microscope or telescope into seeing where there may need to be change made.
Right.
And very often, taking a page out of what you just said, is I'll be asking people, well, why are you doing that? What's the value from that task, that exercise, that those hours that you're spending, pulling or compiling this data, what do you do with it? And very often, particularly in companies that have been around for a while, it goes back to decisions that were made 5, 10, sometimes 15 years ago, and the business case or rationale for that is completely different. We're not in the same lines of service. There's a new something or other system or tool we're using that does a better job at that, does it faster or with less effort. But nobody went back and said, hey, we have to tell the guy in the next room he doesn't have to do that anymore.
Right,
so
exactly.
There's a lot of, I find, inefficiency, particularly with accounting and management-related data, that if you get a chance to do that business flow mapping, you can come back and say, wait a minute, here's a way we can get better information with less effort and in a less elapsed time.
Yeah, yeah. I like two things you said specifically about that. One is the illustrative aspect of that. I think the vast majority of us are visual learners and visual thinkers, and so if you can literally portray a workflow, on a board, such as you said. I mean, I've done everything from, whiteboards to little sticky pads with a zillion little notes. But when people can actually see a workflow like that, it makes more sense to them. And I think they also are more adept at pointing out areas that are like, why are we doing that? And you're probably like me, the worst answer to a question of why are you doing it that way is, well, that's because that's the way we've always done it.
Exactly.
Drives me nuts.
I'm very visual, just like you were describing, Tom, that I very often after a client meeting, particularly with a new prospect, I'll be out in the car drawing some things that I'll use in my follow-up because that's the way my brain works. And I think just you, so when you show it to people, to kind of play it back to them, this is what I heard.
Yeah.
And they agree, yep, that sounds about right. And then they'll look at that just like you were saying. They go, hey, wait a minute. I never really, when they, because they're not looking at it in that dimension every day.
Right.
They
right.
miss the visual connection of how these things go together. And that very often happens that people learn from their predecessor.
Right.
And I've had that happen even in situations where I'll go in a company that's using a software application that I happen to be very familiar with, and they're not using certain components or functionality that could be a benefit to them.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'll ask the question, what about this? They'll go, I don't know anything about that because the person before me didn't teach me that.
Right.
So I think that's one of the things, maybe a little off point, but as I've seen how companies have adapted to the stresses of the marketplace in the last 10, 15 years, the money for development, in the budget for developing management or grooming management talent, just training the rank and file has disappeared. So
right.
that you have people that are very often doing their job sort of like the old family legacy on the front porch.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they're learning some technical things. So I encourage people and companies to think about putting money in your training budget to keep people's skills up on the tools that they're using and go back to that well of training trainers and just making sure you're getting your money's worth from the applications that you use.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate in businesses of all sizes when the dollars get tight, for some reason, training is the first thing they cut. And I don't know why that is because it must be that people at the top just don't understand the value of maintaining a great training program, or at least, staying on top of the ability to allow their people to stay current with changes in processes or softwares and so on and so forth.
Well, yeah, I think the parallel, the other place that I never understand that also is right up there with the training budget is sales and marketing.
Yeah.
When things tighten up, those are two of the, on the top five list of places people look to cut. And I think in the example of the instance of training, it's a time where we need to improve our skills.
Yeah.
Because we need to do get more done with less.
Yep.
And the same thing with sales and marketing. It's harder to sell.
Mm-hmm.
So our marketing needs to get ratcheted up.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that, to me, while it makes sense if you're trying to do the math of numbers and slashing budgets from a moving the business process forward, I think it's a cutting your nose to spite your face type of strategy.
Yeah, yeah. And I want to take a step back to another thing you said a few minutes ago that I think is really very powerful, too. As you're looking at this illustrated map of what you're your workflow looks like, what your processes work look like. I agree with you 110% about the notion of looking at every one of those steps and saying, what's the value add of doing this within this process? And if there is no value add, either as a means of simplifying a process, smoothing out a process, generating revenue, cutting costs or something like that, if there is no value add, you need to take a look at that and ask yourself, why on earth are we doing this?
Yeah, no, and I'll say that to people. Stop doing that for a week and see if anyone notices.
Yeah, that's a good way of approaching it, definitely. So the other thing you commented on was that all too often companies use sort of off-the-shelf solutions and they're not really getting the right data when they need to make good decisions. So talk a little bit more about that.
Well, I think that what happens in many cases, because it's very easy to get the basic mechanics of bookkeeping and balancing your bank account and getting your CPA firm what they need to do your taxes, then you know, you can go into any business supply store or online and get these kind of products. But there's some certain, is even though you can set it up and you think you're getting it to work, it is working technically from a piece of software point of view, but it isn't necessarily working to the fit that what you need for running your business. So that's sort of a parallel of that workflow. If you sit down and map out, I look at it as sort of three passes. As we said before, that first flow is what you need to do to get your product and or service out into the marketplace.
Right.
The second one is in the process of doing that, you're building a flow of management data about, you know, how much it costs to make things, how fast we get things done. So that's information to help manage the business. And then throughout that, there's also financial transactions that are ultimately got to do with profit and loss and cash flow and making money. And they're things that work in parallel. But if they're not coordinated, you can be having a set of numbers, particularly on the financial side, that aren't really reflective of whether you're doing well or not.
Right,
and
right.
So somebody that understands what's available and how those tools work and can help guide you on how to best structure it. And sometimes, not to get too technical, it's a simple thing of in an accounting system of getting the chart of accounts matched up to the way the things that are important for that particular business. So that's an area I try to help people step back and say, you know, there's a real inexpensive way of doing this on your own.
Yeah.
But that may not be the best thing for you in the long term. And the cost of doing that type of sort of mapping out and workflow isn't that significant given it's an investment, but it's not a outrageous investment once a company is moving forward and has revenue and employees.
Sure, sure. I'm assuming that one of the things you can do for a company is look at that workflow and then look at the tools they're using and help them derive better data out of the tools that would help them make better decisions, control their costs better, understand their throughput from a financial perspective much better. And, you know, from that perspective, understanding throughput from a financial perspective can certainly sometimes make or lead to significant changes that not only improve a process but reduce costs.
Oh, exactly. And a lot of times what happens with that data, if it's not being put together in a context that understands what actually is that what the transactions are in the business,
mm-hmm.
as well as what the decisions are going to be made, oftentimes I'll ask someone, where you made this decision, what was your basis for it? And they'll say, well, I've got this report that tells me this.
Mm-hmm.
So I took A and concluded B. And the unfortunate thing sometimes is, A isn't telling them what they think it's telling them. So that's where just having someone kind of set you up and give you some guidance, and that's a coaching thing as well for small businesses. That if you want that, needing to understand what the data means and what's a decision that you can make off of it, and what's not an appropriate decision to make off.
Yeah, there's a lot of data available that people don't really know how to deal with, and that goes all the way up to the top of the company sometimes,
And it's overwhelming today because there's tools that create all kinds of statistics. Some of them are relevant and some of them are not.
Yeah.
And some of it's also the things that a, $2 million or $10 million business might need are different than a $20 or $30 million business.
Sure.
And it's not a one-size-fits-all in terms of getting management timely data to make critical decisions.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you help businesses put together what I call dashboards where they can figure out exactly what their critical processes are in the business and map all the financials through that and automatically get the data that they need that makes sense to them that they can make decisions based on?
Yes. I have a concept that I call 4 charts, and it's really about helping companies find the 4 to 6 metrics.
Perfect.
That they ought to be looking at somewhere between daily to monthly, depending on what kind of business it is. And usually...
And depending on the data.
Yeah, the type of data. Weekly tends to be, particularly for consulting firms, where hours are the key inventory weekly.
Yeah.
And so they just have an idea of how you tell it. Because a problem I see with a lot of smaller organizations is they need timely data on what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And where they fall down is they're not good at capturing and assembling the data on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis.
Right.
So if it's now we're at November 20th and you haven't tabulated everything that happened in the month of October yet,
mm-hmm.
and it takes us a week or two to finish it and test, now we're pushing December. At that point, you lost the month of November to take any action on what you learned from October.
Right.
So
right.
I think that's the thing of having routines that are easy and not disruptive to capture data as close to real time so you can take action on it. And that's one of the problems with the traditional accounting. It's all after the fact.
Yeah.
And so this dashboard concept, which many financial systems today have a component to it, is a way to get there, or there's other tools that you can use that take feeds from other processes. So
mm-hmm.
it's very much, I'm not saying that every 5 minutes the CEO needs to be looking at their handheld to read an update, but you have to build time into the week to reflect on what the appropriate metrics are.
Right, right. You know, it ties a little bit to another conversation you and I are having about projects within, a business environment and how, at the front end of a project, there's a certain number of people involved and they're all highly motivated to get an awful lot done. And over time, management begins, or the management or other participants begin to understand what they're doing, and all of a sudden they want, a say. They want there's some pushback. There's some clarification that they want, and it kind of inverts the whole process in terms of progress to plan, and even what happens to projects financially when that occurs.
Sure.
Describe that to our listeners better. You did a better job than I did.
I was wondering how I was going to, but it kind of just popped in my head. We have both in the national scope and locally here where we are in Massachusetts some very visible large-scale technology products that, for all intents and purposes, failed or at a minimum failed to deliver on time. And my experience in 20-plus years of either being associated with these kind of projects is this phenomena. At the beginning, if you looked at this of sort of like a bar graph on the upper left, a lot of enthusiasm, a lot mm-hmm. of resources, and as we go towards the end of the project, that tails off because we're finishing up and fine-tuning. And then you have sort of another in parallel to that, or overlay to that, of management's influence, both in terms of setting the stage, making decisions, giving ongoing direction and guidance. And it seems like it's inverse.
Right.
That management only really, really gives you the time you need at the end, where if they were more participatory, and at the beginning, you know, you have a launch and they'll set the mission and say, okay, team, get everybody in the room. Here's the budget. Here's the deadline. We want to build a house. And then they go away until you're putting the front doorknob on the house. They go, hey, I don't like that color. So I think that this is one a problem project teams have is they get charged with a mission and then management goes away.
Yeah.
And the problem is that when at the end it's too late, it's too expensive. And if management had a way to monitor input without interfering so that there were these checkpoints, it's much easier at a lower cost and the less elapsed time to redirect something, you know, before all the shingles, going back to my house, all the shingles are on the house and the plumbing and the electrical is done. I see that that's a disconnect, particularly in larger organizations,
mm-hmm.
Where they think because there's a team of 10 people, 20 people, 50 people working on it, that all is well. And that often is not the case.
Yeah, that's true. I sort of relate that to some organizations that I worked in the past where you get off to a great start, but the management support, if it's there in the front end, you can maintain that momentum and you can accomplish some amazing things. But if you're relying on everybody just to buy into the process sort of blindly on the back end, sometimes that'll really come and bite you.
Right.
You know, it doesn't work all that well. Well, Hugh, this has been another really good conversation. A lot of people, you know, in the corporate world learn these things, and then when they get to become an entrepreneur, they forget to bring those learnings with them. So we're here to remind them of the things they need to do better and on a more regular basis. So I thank you for being here again today, and I want to make certain that people know how to get a hold of you because you've got a lot of great experience and skills and ideas that you can bring to the table, particularly for the small to mid-size entrepreneurs. And so let's make sure they know how to get a hold of you.
Sure. You can find us on the Internet at www.winterviewgroup.com. If you have a question or something we can help you with, you can email me at info@winterviewgroup.com. And thank you again, Tom. I enjoyed
it. It's great to have you back, and we'll have you back again and find another conversation we need to have to shake people out of their boots and get them moving forward.
All right, great. Great. I love talking about the business of business.
Yeah, it is. It's very fun, isn't it? Also, for those of you who are listening to our broadcast today, I'd like to invite you to go to the Aspiring Entrepreneurs Guild website where you can learn more about our organization. You can search through our online library, listen to other interviews like this, and also find other data out there like white papers and webinars and all kinds of good information that may help you in your business. So go to www.ouraeguild.com. This is Tom Stemple thanking you for listening to us today on the UR Business Network, and may your business thrive.
The UR Business Network. We mean business.